The voice of the Army. The voice of the Army is on the air, calling Americans everywhere. Maybe you're just the one they are looking for to volunteer and help win the war. While our brave soldiers fight throughout the universe, won't you serve as a U.S. Army nurse? The voice of the Army is calling you to get in step with the march to victory. It was very early morning, with the city asleep and the sky like dirty gray wool. The ships moved quietly into harbor and quietly docked. The gangplanks were run up to the decks, and the men started down. Soldiers, the men, battle-worn. Each step a step from a fighting front, from a German prison horror, from a hospital agony. Each step a step toward home. The men started down. The Statue of Liberty was saluted. The good American earth was touched. The real American girls were kissed. These men, these heroes, were home. Home for dinner, for Christmas, the 4th of July, for ice cream sodas and ball games and that wonderful Saturday night date, for a job, a way of living, and a future, for so many things. Home for good. Some laughed, some sang, a few cried, all talked. Of many things. The things they remembered out of the war and will remember. The things they'll never forget for all their lives. The days and nights of fighting without end. The days and nights of prison torture. The days and nights in the hospital bed. Things they'll remember. All.
The thing that sticks with me most is that incident with Eddie. Eddie was about the youngest kid in our outfit. Real nice kid. On this particular attack, he was advanced scout. And he got too anxious and moved too far ahead. He was crossing an open field in front of the towns we were after. And all at once, Jerry opened up on him. Crossfire with machine guns. Lipped him right up. It was awful. The Jerrys were less than 100 yards from him. And it would have been murder to try to get him out. You should have heard him moaning. All of us back there and nothing we could do. Listening to him was the worst thing I've ever been through. And when nightfall came and the orders were to pull back without the kid, I couldn't do it. Listen, I don't like to break orders. Take a look at my record. Clean as a whistle. But I loved that kid like a brother. I couldn't pull out and leave him there. I couldn't do it. That's exactly what I said to Red. Red, I said I'm not going to leave Eddie out there.
Hey, don't be a chump, Pete. You heard what the Sarge said.
I don't care what the Sarge said. I'm going to get Eddie out. Of course, Red came with me. That's the way he was. We took off as soon as it was dark. The rest of the guys had pulled back. We knew what was ahead of us. And all jokes aside, we were scared stiff. We crawled along for what seemed like hours. And I was shaking so hard I couldn't keep still. It was black as pitch and deathly quiet. The guns had stopped and Eddie wasn't screaming anymore. We had to feel our way and I almost jumped a mile when Red reached out and grabbed my foot.
Hey!
It's me.
Okay.
We should be pretty close.
Yeah. Listen for him.
Okay.
Is there anything?
No.
Eddie.
Hey, take it easy, will you? You want the Jerrys to...
Fellas.
It's Eddie. It's Eddie.
Come on. Right over here.
Fellas.
Here we are, kid. Here we are.
I knew you guys would come for me. Oh, gee, I knew you'd come.
It's okay, Eddie. We're gonna get you back now.
I knew
it's
you'd
okay.
Come. I knew you'd come. I knew it. I knew it.
Yeah, was glad we found him. He'd been hit square in the belly and in both arms. And it must have hurt awful. Lying there all that time. We got him between us and dragged him back up the hill. He was crying all the time. And I thought it was the pain, but when I asked him, he said, "I'm just crying because I'm so darn happy." He's in the hospital now, and I guess he'll be okay.
All talked of many things. The things they remembered out of war and would remember. The things they wouldn't forget for all their lives. The days and nights of fighting without end. The days and nights of prison torture. The days and nights on the hospital bed. Things they'll remember always.
I don't have to think hard to tell about the thing I remember most. I was captured by the Germans in August 1943. August 1943. I had been shot in the legs by a sniper just before that. Despite the wounds, they made me walk 12 miles to a prison camp. From the prison camp, 1,500 other prisoners and myself were moved to Stalag 8B at Lambsdorff in Oberschlesien. They put us in a compound there by ourselves. We were 400 men in one hut. They tied our hands with binder twine from 8 in the morning till 8 at night. Later they used handcuffs instead of twine. That went on for a whole year. The temperature in winter was 10 to 20 below. We had no heat, except in our clothes. We had no blankets. Our own military doctors and medics amputated frozen feet and fingers. My pal, Al McDonough, had two frozen feet.
To get me to camp, they walked 5 days in the snow without food. Then they loaded us on a freight train. Some of the guys who already had frozen hands and feet never made it. The guards clubbed them and left them lying in the snow. I guess I know what happened to them. We were on the train for 4 days and five nights. We had no food, no water, no heavy clothes. We licked the ice on the hinges of the boxcar for water. When I got to camp, both my feet were frozen. I would have died if it wasn't for an American doctor. Under the crudest kind of conditions, he amputated. He was wonderful, that doc. But they'd taken away almost all his medical supplies, including the packs of morphine syrettes. That amputation wasn't much fun.
Al and I were at Lambsdorff prison camp 1 year and 5 months. I don't have to think hard to tell about the thing I remember most.
All talked of many things. The things they remembered out of war and will remember. The things they'll never forget for all their lives. The days and nights of fighting without end. The days and nights of prison torture. The days and nights in the hospital bed. Things they'll remember. Always.
With me was a woman. The most wonderful woman I've ever known. Her name was Marjorie Carr. Lieutenant Marjorie Carr, Army nurse. What happened was I got mine on D-Day. We were heading over the channel in our bomb-loaded boat and we hit a mine. I don't remember much more after that, but when I woke up in the hospital, my entire face was covered in bandages. The agony was terrible. I could hardly bear it. I think I'd have given up right then. Right then and there, if it hadn't been for this voice that kept talking to me, kept assuring me.
Easy now, Joe. No, you're not blind. Your face is badly burned by phosphorus. No, you're going to be all right. I promise you, you're going to be all right.
I'd have given up if it hadn't been for that voice. I hung on. I needed to. Pain was something awful. The doctors were great.
The treatment was great, and I far better, like she promised. Began to feel even good. And then came the day when they removed the dressing. I saw by the expressions on their faces that it was bad. But I had no idea how bad until she showed me in a mirror.
Joe, you must have patience. Joe. Joe.
I cried, sure. I admit it, I cried. It's the most hideous sight I'd ever seen. And it was me. I prayed all that night I'd die. But I didn't die. That nurse wouldn't let me.
You've got to have patience, Joe. Oh, sure, it's bad now, but it won't always be like this. There'll be plastic surgery when the tissues have healed. You've got to have patience, Joe.
She wouldn't let me die. She kept talking to me, kept assuring me. And finally, I said to her, "Nurse, how can you stand it? How can you stand looking at me? Even the fellows in the ward turn away."
"I can stand it."
"You don't mind it? Really?"
"No. And anyhow, I'm seeing you as you're going to look about 6 months from now. And that's not bad, Joe. Not bad at all."
Ah, she was something, that nurse. She gave me what you need most when you're hurt, knocked down. She gave me hope. A little after that, she came in with the answer to something that had been bothering more than all the rest put together.
"I got a reply to that letter I wrote your wife, Joe. Listen, I have an idea what Joe's reaction will be. He's that kind of guy. He'll be afraid to burden himself on me. He'll be afraid that I'll care how he looks. It may be hard to convince him different, but that's what I'm going to do. And of course, it's not without selfishness on my part. Joe was so darn good-looking, I was always scared stiff of losing him. Now maybe I'll have a better chance of holding on. The rest is very personal, between women. Do I have to read more?"
"No. No, you don't have to read more."
"Joe, I've got some good news for you. Major Wilson says you're ready for plastic surgery."
"He does? No kidding?"
"No kidding. You'll be back in the States this time next month."
"The States?"
"Uh-huh. Just think of it, Joe. Back home in a month."
"Oh, I am. I am thinking of it, nurse." With me was a woman, the most wonderful woman I've ever known. Her name was Marjorie Carr, Lieutenant Marjorie Carr, Army nurse. She saved my life and made me want to live it. I'll never forget her.
All talk of many things, the things they remembered out of war and will remember, the things they'll never forget for all their lives. The terrible anxiety for a pal in trouble, the incredible horror of a Nazi prison camp, the beautiful memory of the army nurse. The war is ended in Europe. The fighting there is over. The prisoners have been liberated. But the magnificent work of the army nurse lives on for always. In hospitals overseas, in hospitals here at home, at the fighting fronts of the Pacific. Hers is the work of mercy, of healing, of caring for the sick and wounded. That work never ends. The men who fight in this war will always remember her. Let us always remember her, too. This closes another program in the series, The Voice of the Army.